Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl. We in our last episode that we just recorded, we were talking about in one of the parts of that question that came up was, well, do I record an FMEA? And it's all online. And I think there was other things that sparked in my mind is like, what other things changed just because you moved an FMEA to online? And I my experience has been, I've had a team meeting and one person was critical to the meeting, but they were, an essential subject matter expert, but they were traveling. So they joined us remotely for a couple hours. And that was difficult. That was just one person remote on the speakerphone. And it was a facilitation challenge to make sure they were included and could hear and were prompted and things like that. But there's more to it than that. I think there's a bunch of stuff we're sorting out now as we move more and more onto the online meetings and virtual meetings and stuff like that.
Yeah, there is. There's, let's just chat on the broader subject of virtual meetings, and we can include FMEA. We can include essentially teaching if you're teaching a class. Mm-hmm. There's different objectives, or maybe you have a meeting with the group of people that you're trying to accomplish some objective. There's doing it in person, and then there's doing it virtually. And what have we learned? What have you and I learned by shifting our work more and more online? How can we be as efficient or even better than we were when we did most things in person? So I just find that to be a fascinating topic. And in all humility, it's a learning curve for me personally. And each day I'm just sort of reflecting on what worked, what didn't work, mm-hmm. and then next week what works and what can I do better. And I suspect that'll be going on for some time, that learning process.
See, I come to this from a completely different perspective. And when we were first talking about this topic, I know that there's some nuances to it. And I think the biggest challenge, let me back up. I've been listening to this, it's a lecture series type podcast type thing. And he was talking about advent of technology, and the lectures I was listening to yesterday was kind of the invention of the internet and how it's changed society and business and all kinds of other cool stuff. And it was some of the technical aspects of how it came to be and where it came around and the first email. And actually, email was added on to this connection between these big computers just so they could say, hey, I'm sending you a message. I'm sending you some files. Just so they could signal that, hey, this stuff's coming and this is what it is. And then the researchers found out that, hey, this is pretty easy to do. I don't have to pick up the phone. I can just leave them a message. And then eventually it evolved into email. And now it's the curse of our inboxes that we're plagued with. But I'm thinking to myself and they were talking about Archie and before web browsers and before websites and before Google and all the other stuff. And I'm like, I used to do that. I used to use Gopher sites and I did all that stuff. I'm thinking, and it was about that time, it was before websites, that I actually got in touch with through the interwebs is in all these different FTP sites and everything else. I ran into a professor that seemed to have some knowledge that could help me solve a problem and send him an email. And we ended up writing a technical paper. And it was a year after it was published that we actually met for the first time. And that was in the early 90s. And so I've been working remote, for years and years and years. And I've been working from home at least one day a week and oftentimes all week since the 90s. So for me, it's been just what I do. And that's the hard part for me to say, well, what do we need to do? Now, saying all that, I recognize that part of the challenge is people like you, Carl, that aren't used to doing this. So no offense, but it's, I think that's the challenge.
Online, let's take the last 20 years. Okay, so right. Since leaving GM nearly 20 years ago, I've been working with over 100 companies, and that means visiting them.
Yep.
So most of that work is done on site. So I'll arrive and we'll do consulting work, we'll do teaching, we'll do collaboration. And I'm used to seeing the people face-to-face, eye contact, and getting work done that way. And it's only been the last couple of years that, and of course I've been, had web meetings.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all been done web meetings. And so throughout that, in preparation, I'm doing web meetings, that type of thing. But a lot of the work is done in person for me, yeah, up until the last couple of years. And so now I've been shifting more. And then with COVID, it's ramped up literally 100%.
Right.
And so I have these lessons learned that I'm documenting. It's probably too formal a word, but just sort of keeping track of. And you've been living it for years. So let me start by asking you, Fred, what would you say to someone who's wants to do better meetings and online? What are two or three important things for them to know or to think about?
Two things come to mind. One is kind of broad, is you need to run an effective meeting, whether in person or online. You know, have a why you're meeting. What's the desired outcome? How will you know when you achieve it? What's the agenda? Are the right people there? If this is a decision-making thing or a recommendation thing or information sharing thing, are we set up so that we can accomplish that? And that's true in person or not, right? So yeah. I think you need to be able to run and participate in good meeting practices to start. It doesn't automatically get better or worse when you go online. I think you just need to run a good meeting. If you decide that you need these six people together for this particular purpose, well, then make good use of that. And online is the same. Now, the online unique part is turn your phone off, close the email account. You know, and that's true even nowadays when it was in person, is somebody's over on their phone texting what their order for lunch is or checking their email or doing whatever. And it's easier to do that when you're online. In an online meeting is have another screen open. And, you know, I saw a video early on in March where this guy was his photo of him looking intently at the screen, fell over and it caught him in a hammock behind him, so behind the screen. That he had something propped up in front of his camera that he looked, you know, yeah, I'm paying attention.
Yeah.
So it's, I think we're driven by distraction way too many times. And part of an effective meeting is that you're fully present in the meeting as a participant or as a facilitator or as whatever role you have in that meeting. And by being remote, it's way too easy to be distracted. It's easier to be distracted, I should say. It's not way too easy. It is. It just makes it easier. And I think that's a disservice to the purpose of that meeting. So it goes back to, it's got to be a reason to be at that meeting. And it's got to be clear. And all the meeting management stuff helps to overcome this, saying, all right, no distractions, let's focus and let's get this done.
Those are some excellent pointers. Let me just explore those for a minute with you. I completely agree on the effective meeting comments. There are meeting norms of behavior and how you run good meetings. And a lot of us have been to meeting school, yeah, where we've had classes on how to run good meetings and things. And that is going to be true no matter what venue you're in and what stage of your career. Highly recommend people do your own research, you know, watch YouTubes, whatever, but get trained on how to run effective meetings and apply it to virtual meetings or in person. So that, yep, that's a great comment. I want to talk about the distractibility thing. That I've been learning more and more about that. Learning. Experience is a name people give to their mistakes. That's the quote from. So I've been, from that aspect, I've been learning.
Right.
to address distractibility as part of my teaching. And really this applies to if you're consulting as well, but let's just talk in a teaching environment. I wouldn't worry about it. I'd say, okay, people come to my class and they do whatever they do and that's up to them.
Right.
Nah. So now when I go on site and this is many years now, computers closed, cell phones off, and I literally do handouts in pen and paper for notes.
Right.
Because I found that people are so, I don't want to use the word entrapped, but they're so, it's so difficult to not react to a little text that comes in or a little notice that pops up.
Yep.
People are so attuned to that, that the simplest thing is just to get rid of it.
Right.
And so when I'm with a class, I really want 100% focus. And we just take the distraction out of the room by shutting off computers and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not perfect because computers are a great aid, but I had to make that trade-off.
Right.
But as you point out, when you go online, you can't do that because people are using their computer to interact.
Right.
So I have to compensate by adding in more interactivity, more questions to the students. I limit the size of the class so I can go through Joe, Mary, Bill, Sam, Sue, and I ask them questions to keep them involved in the meeting because I cannot control whether they go off and start typing an email. And so there's compensation techniques you can use, more exercises, things like that. Yeah. So,
well, what do you do when you call on, Mary and she goes, I'm sorry, I was in the other room. What was the question?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you deal with that?
So I deal with that, first of all, by making it part of the intro. And in fact, even before I start a class, I share emails and we talk a little bit on emails, what the expectations are. And I let them know that the modules build on each other and that if you miss a module, you're going to have difficulty. And so that's part of the prepping. And then I remind that at the beginning. Then if the inevitable happens and you say, Mary, what do you think about this? And she says, well, what was the question again? I just sort of flag it. I will never embarrass someone in front of others.
Right.
And not even one-on-one. In other words, embarrassment is not a good technique.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to call out someone, shame on you for not paying attention. And so that's a important aspect of it is to, So when if Mary does that, then I'll just make a little side note to myself to make sure I'm involving Mary a little more.
Okay. That's a good technique. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's
a limitation. I mean, we can't control it.
Right. Yeah.
I do want to see a gallery of the faces. And so most people do. I have two monitors and I take the gallery of, in a class I just had a few days ago with 15 people. And so I have all 15 of them. And then if suddenly there's no face there, I can right away. I know they're, maybe I should take a break.
I had a meeting the other day and one of the people on it was kind of there just in case. And at one point they were gone and their dog sat in their chair and was looking at the screen. It's like, okay, whatever. We're working from home these days.
Now, I will state that, I don't want people there just in case.
Yeah.
When a person comes to a meeting, I think they should. But expectation is they participate.
Right. Yeah. No, and that goes back to effective meetings type stuff. But yeah, that's a good technique. But I think now when you're live, you can call on people, you can and you can see who's interested, not interested, and who's, and you're trying to gauge how much participation goes around the room. And in part, we've talked about this before, is that, well, what if you got one person that just wants to talk the whole time and they know all the answers and they know all the recommendations, they know all everything else, and it shuts out everybody else where they don't even want to speak. And part of facilitation in any meeting is, especially if it's a brainstorm type of activity, is, well, how do you guard against people that aren't as aggressive at getting their opinion across or their point of view or their the information they have is. But online, it's, I think the setting up that norm of going, we're going to talk to each other. I'm going to moderate that and say, all right, Mary, what do you think? Or George, what do you think? Or, you know, go around the room and poll them. And I've done that live meetings also. But I think online you can set up more of a norm that that's the way to control the airwaves.
Yeah, very good. It's so common. Let's say we're in an FME meeting at this point. It is essential to get balanced participation, not just because we're trying to be good people and pay it, you know, allow lots of different points of view. That's important. But it's also essential because you've put people in the room from different backgrounds. One represents the test department, one represents the systems engineering. You know, you have different people there for a reason. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not getting balanced participation, there's really three things that can happen. One is you're going to have blind spots. So whoever is doing the talking might have a blind spot.
Yep.
So that's bad. Number two is you're not getting the dialogue from the different points of view, like field and test and service. And the third one, which is important, is the deep discussion that occurs on a real good, well-run meeting often comes up with things that the individual will miss. Mm-hmm. And so I really want to have that. But would I start, Fred, with a discussion about introverts and extroverts? And the basically, you know, I take maybe 30 seconds and state that extroverts tend to process information by talking, and introverts tend to process information by thinking. And extroverts are not better than introverts. And so we need to have a balance of all people, regardless of what your personality style is. And so I basically make it okay that introverts can realize, okay, well, I don't talk as much, but Carl still wants me to speak up. And the extrovert's thinking, well, I tend to talk a little too much, so maybe I should listen to others.
Well, I frame it as, I mean, for extroverts, part of their process is that talking it through, and that's okay. But while you're talking through, the introverts are distracted to where their processing is interrupted. So dead air is okay. We can pause. Let's think this through, you know? And it's, and then you get the person that's just rearming for their next argument, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. And it's a different issue.
That's a listening problem.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I think is unique to the online forums, and it's becoming more rare as more and more people become familiar with the tools and protocols and stuff. But I'm finding one of the norms that's becoming more prevalent is, what do we do if we lose connection? Right now, if I'm in a live meeting and the lights go out, and is this an evacuation or is this that or the other thing? There's always a little confusion there that. That's not terribly common in my experience when in live meetings, but it can happen. And then when I'm in the oil industry companies, they always start with a safety briefing. You know, if something happens, this is what we do. Yeah. And, you know, and oh, by the way, the bathroom's over that way, you know, kind of thing. I was in a meeting a couple of weeks ago online, and it was like, if we lose connection, retry logging in. And if that still doesn't work, I'll send out a voicemail to everybody, you know, or an email to everybody to tell you what the next step is. So it was a very clear 5-second ground rule of, you know, try this. If you have problems, try this. If all hell breaks loose, then we'll regroup through email and figure it out from there.
That's a good what if.
Right. But it's something that, I mean, as all the kids, at least out here in California, a lot of them are going to school online. Zoom was having just overload problems. You know, all of a sudden now you got thousands and thousands of people on, and they and their parents are trying to sort out, get this all working. I think for important stuff, and I know you do this, Carl, is you do a dry run. You make sure all the connections work. Remember when we first had overhead projectors and the you know, connecting our computer to the projector type
thing.
I always got there early because it almost never worked and I needed
Let's make a really important point for people is to, when you're, especially if you're starting out, always dry run. Even if you dry run with the IT people or just with your, with different contacts, make sure that there are no technical glitches that would have been solved by dry run. It doesn't solve everything, but at least take that out.
Well, we do that on our webinars as we get on 15 minutes to a half hour early just to make sure the microphones are working. Just right. Can we see the slides? And let's
It's so unprofessional to arrive at a meeting and, oh, I'm having a little glitch here, you know. Get rid of those before the meeting starts.
Yeah. No, it's, and that's the hard part is if, especially if you're going from one meeting to the next meeting to the next meeting. In our business, Carl, we will jump from WebEx to Zoom to GoToMeeting to Windows Teams or, you know, I think I've touched just about every single one of these different platforms. And most of the time, much of the time, it just works. But I grew up in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and we call it Lombardi time because Vince Lombardi told, you know, said, if you arrive 15 minutes before the start of the practice, you're late. You know, yes. So you're always there at least 15 minutes early. And it was, so you're ready. You're ready to go. When it's start time, we're ready to go.
I want to bring up one of my favorite topics for online is the, I believe in that when you're in a meeting, when you're teaching or any type of interaction with people, obviously communication is essential. And that's really the essence of what's going on. Why can't you just sit in a cubicle? Well, because you're communicating with human beings. And that means you're imparting an idea from yourself to them or they're imparting an idea to you. And what I learned years ago is that a huge percentage, and there's tons of papers on this as to what that percentage is, so I won't say it right here, but there's a significant percentage of communication is body language.
Yep.
And that's why in person has worked for lots of people. And so when you're online, it's very important that you have a clear audio and clear video connection so that you can see people. Mm-hmm. And then you can actually, if you're good enough with this and you have good enough connection and you practice your platform well, then you can see people's expressions, you can listen to their voice, and catch the nuances that are such an important part of communication. You won't be able to do it as well as if you're in person, but at least you should try to do it when you're online.
Yeah, and I think part of that is also like in our podcast is we're not doing video, but the idea is that if something's bothering us or is an issue or we disagree or whatever, we say it. It's not just we cross our arms like, wait a sec. You know, you hear it more with Kirk and I. Now, wait a sec, Kirk. I don't agree with that.
You know? Right.
But there's a little bit different. You have to compensate. And you've heard me do this, Carl. I'm over here drawing this thing with my hands or waving my arms around. You got to understand the limitations of it and then deal with that. But to a large extent, that's true in person, too. I've learned over the years that, you know, crossed arms might mean they're just cold. It's got to be consistent with a bunch of other signals that occur in body language. And it's easy to misinterpret body language. It really, really is easy to do that.
It is. This is why I think it's like, I've always said, like, when you're doing an FME online, it'd be nice. You can't always do this, but it'd be nice if you could do the first one in person.
Yeah.
And get to know people. And so if you can't do that, then I go around the room and just get to know people.
Yeah.
You know, what's your background? What skill are you, or what is your job responsibility? Just getting to know people and how they speak and things. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. 'Cause you want to make that connection. So it's not just all about what data is from one brain to the other. It's human beings making a connection. And that's an important part of communication.
Yep, it definitely is. And some of that you can do in the pre-work and getting to know the players in the team. But yeah, it's all, I think in summary, what we're talking about, a lot of what we do online is exactly the same as doing a good meeting or session in person. Then the next part is that we have some technical stuff we all may or may not be familiar with. And so it's an added level that you have a barrier. Everybody will think you're an introvert, but you're just on mute and you need to know how to turn mute off.
That's right.
It might be on your microphone. It might be here or there, but that's where the dry runs and practices. And I think the lesson learned here is that more and more people are doing this more and more often. So I'm finding it to be, you come on, everybody knows the rules. We're good. And then we're off and running. Things work. But I still run into somebody that's way too far from the microphone, or they have a horrible microphone that's hitting their sweater and scratching all over, and you can't hear them at all. Come on, let's get this right now.
That should be part of that we can add that to the meeting norms. In other words, you have meeting norms in person, and this one's a meeting norm that applies to virtual, which is, let's get a certain minimum level of equipment to where you don't have a scratchy microphone, or and you got the gain turned up at the right amount and things like that. Otherwise, it's just like you're not showing up. It's very disrespectful.
Yeah. No, very true.
I had one other one to add just before we wrap up here is a lesson that worked really well from a class I taught last week is the possibility of having your web platform, whether it's Teams or Zoom or WebEx or whatever, along with Google Sheets or Google Docs, both. And that worked absolutely great on an FMEA. And it also worked great on a teaching. So from the teaching standpoint, you can have the Google Sheets open and you can do breakout rooms and things like that, and have your Zoom working with Google Sheets. And from an FMEA standpoint, you could have the document in one place so that people can look at different tabs if they need to, and they can one person can be scribing while another person's talking. So you have these technology points can actually enhance the outcome online.
Oh yeah, definitely agree. And I'm thinking even in a generic meeting is that you can have a document that has the agenda and somebody's taking notes or annotating that, and another document is the parking lot, which is a common feature in effective meetings. Like, here comes an idea, let's put that on the parking lot. Or you can use the chat window. I've seen that done effectively. It's like, well, I've got an idea. Here's the topic I'd like to add onto that. And then the facilitator says, all right, George, you've got an interesting idea. Why don't you bring that in? The technology allows us to do, instead of a chaotic, many people trying to figure out when to jump in, is you can cue stuff. You can go asynchronous and put notes down and ideas down and chats down, and then guide the discussion to make sure everybody is heard at the appropriate context. And that's hard to do in real life, but it's, I think, much easier to do when you have a Zoom meeting with a chat window open.
So here's a question to our listeners. This is a topic that I bet everybody that's listening has something to contribute. And I really mean that sincerely, because we're all doing a certain amount of work from home. We're all doing a certain amount of virtual. So I bet as a listener, you have some ideas as to what works and what doesn't work. And I also bet you have some questions. So we would love to hear from you. So if you wouldn't mind just taking a moment after this podcast and send us, contact us on ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and let us know your questions or what works for you or anything that you would like to see incorporated in our next podcast that we do on the subject of virtual meetings.
And we're also available through our About pages and on LinkedIn. You can find us many different ways. And I always add the LinkedIn one because I get about half the questions that we talk about through LinkedIn.
Fantastic. So
it works. All right, Carl. I think we got way more we could talk about this stuff.
We could keep going for hours.
So let's respect our typical time of this is 20, 25 minutes or so. We're a little long on this one. So if you're sitting in the parking lot waiting for it to end, well, here's your moment. You can shut down your podcast. So, all right. Thanks, Carl.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.